Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post is delivered this week for the last time of 2019, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she has been every single week on this journey, the one, the only, the incredibly talented Drea Kaufman.
Hello. Hello. We talked this evening or day or whenever you're listening, while my 2-year-old sits on the couch screaming for Olaf and mommy. So,
well, I mean,
we run a real tight ship.
Was it in that order?
Here.
Was it Olaf first?
It was kind of like everything running together. I feel like mommy and Olaf became one entity that she wanted both of at the same time, but neither. So, I'll leave y'all to figure that one out.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, it makes sense why she would be screaming for Olaf.
I mean, who wouldn't be screaming for Olaf? I mean, that's like screaming for Baby Yoda. Who doesn't love Baby
Yoda?
It's
true.
So,
yeah. I don't know. If you don't love Baby Yoda, I don't know if we can be friends. That's really what it comes down to.
That's true. He is an intergalactic treasure.
He absolutely is. And as I was mentioning to you the other night, I would use Baby Groot as firewood to keep him warm if needed. So that's how far the love goes. But
that's our holiday spirit, y'all.
Absolutely. But that is a totally different question than what we're going to be getting into, which is the 12th chapter of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, which we're really excited to do. Now, remember that you can find us wherever you get your podcasts, anywhere you get your podcasts. But you know what? If you'd like to give us a holiday gift that won't cost you anything other than about 2 minutes of your time, go over to Apple Podcasts, give us a star rating review, help people find the show, and let them know what you think of the show. As I mentioned, anywhere you can get podcasts, you can find Owl Posts. Make sure you're subscribed so you get the episode as soon as it drops. You can find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty or on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. So like us and follow us on both of those places. We've got TheNerdParty.com, which if you go to the contact section, you can also send an email to Dre and I, which is a lot of fun. We always love getting emails from people. So those are all the places that you can find us.
We did have someone on Instagram drop a quick note.
Yes, I love when that happens.
I do too. From Kinsey Byrne. She said she just listened to the episode 143, which was, I'm looking for the title now, Hermione's Helping Hand. And she's a huge fan of the podcast. She listens to everything in the last month to catch up. And now she has to wait every week. And we made her really laugh hard about our slug club theme song. The desire for that. So that made me laugh a lot too all week. It was kind of a pick me up. So.
And I mean, why wouldn't you? Because it does really need its own theme song.
It does.
So
yes. And so she said to keep up the great work.
Kind of awful.
Oh, I know. So. It does. It totally. And like 1970s, early 80s glam rock style. Need outfits.
Big hair band. Yes.
Yeah. All of that.
Maybe we get REO Speedwagon to record it.
All of that sounds amazing. So yeah. So thanks for the note. Well, we're glad we perked you up with that. And we will
yes,
keep up
we are.
The good work just for you.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Well, so Drea, this is, we kind of talked about this last week, I believe, where we were mentioning that, you know, Dumbledore has not necessarily been at the school a lot, and the students have been noticing this. But Harry is really actually noticing this because, well, he hasn't had another lesson with Dumbledore recently. And so whereas once he was feeling kind of good and really hopeful about things in a lot of ways, not hearing from Dumbledore has kind of left him feeling a little bit weird. And honestly, he's kind of been feeling slightly abandoned because they haven't gotten back together yet. And all of that together is just kind of this chapter definitely starts off with Harry. And I would say the whole chapter is kind of like this. He just isn't having like the best week right now.
Yeah, it just, everything seems a little like dumpy. Like, it's not bad. Like, we've definitely read worse weeks of his.
Yes.
And like bad weeks, right? This is just like a ugh kind of feeling, right? Like, everything's just kind of blah. It's like he's kind of struggling with, he mentions a whole bunch of stuff, so he's kind of struggling with nonverbal spells. It's like super gloomy and doomy outside. He hasn't been around Dumbledore. Like, everything's just kind of in this like kind of dumpy place for Harry. And, you know, he just isn't really having it. It's just not, he's not feeling it.
Yeah, no, he's really not. And it's also interesting too, because, you know, they're about midway through the term,
and yeah,
they're in October, and they're about to go to their first Hogsmeade trip. And it's very funny because, and I will say this is probably the funniest part of the chapter, honestly, is that Harry is sitting in bed early in the morning, and he's just reading through his advanced potion making book. And, which, of course, is not something he would normally do, but this prince character really has him interested. And part of that is because he has all of these notations, and it's not just about potions. He's got, like, different spells and everything, and Harry's already tried out a few of them, and they've actually worked, and he's liked them. So, like, he's become slightly obsessed with these spells. And not only that, but one of them is a spell that allows you to have a conversation with the people you want to have a conversation with, and everybody around you can't hear because it just kind of creates this like fuzzy buzzing noise in your ear, so you can't hear the. So that sounds like honestly one of the most helpful spells out there. So,
yeah, it would make like talking in an elevator super helpful. That's where I went with that. Because I'd love to carry on elevator conversations without everyone in the elevator hearing me.
Yes. I think that is the thing that I've really liked in this book, is we've been just learning more about magic in some ways, you know, and as the students are getting, you know, better and better at it. And what's interesting is that Harry sees a spell, and it's a levy corpus, and it's one that's meant to be done non-verbally. And Harry is like, well, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this, because I'm not very good at it, and I haven't been really getting able to get it, which this is the thing I wanted to connect to last week. We talked about how Snape was a terrible teacher for Harry. And it seems like that's continuing into a subject which Harry's normally been very good at, mm-hmm. which is Defense Against the Dark Arts, and he's been struggling with this non-verbal thing. And he's able to do this spell accidentally, non-verbally. And it just kind of, it seems to show, again, that, well, we have a character who's just not very good at teaching this other character. Like, Harry is not being taught well by Snape. He's not being served well by Snape as having him as a teacher.
Well, and I feel like it also speaks a little bit to, like, when we talk about the previous books and, like, how he taught himself to do the Patronus. You remember when Lupin was helping him, he's like, you need to think of a really happy thought. It just goes to show that sort of your mood and your mental state while you're doing these things actually play a factor into your effectiveness, right? So part of it could be that Snape's a terrible teacher, and part of it could just be this personal animosity that's building up that is like acting as a block for him to be able to function, right? Like, he can't do these nonverbal spells solely because he's so angry and worried and, you know, fixated on the fact that it's Snape. Like, whether he's in class or not, I feel like just the affiliation with him kind of ruins it entirely. So
mm-hmm.
it's so interesting to have kind of this concept of that being a factor in everything, because it clearly is, since we're able to see him very easily do this other spell and to be very successful in potions and, you know, able to do the non-verbal spells in Transfiguration and things like that. But it's just Defense Against the Dark Arts, the thing he's naturally talented at, he's just struggling with.
It's just something that's interesting to me too, because Harry's able to pull this spell off immediately.
Yeah.
Which I think was really interesting. And it turns out really funny because he accidentally does this. He wasn't even specifically like pointing his wand at anyone specific, but he wakes Ron up, I would say, rather rudely.
Yeah. Well, and part of it is because he didn't know what it was going to do, right? Like, he didn't know what the spell was or what the intended outcome was. So yep. He just kind of like picked a place on the wall and was like, let's give it a shot and see what happens. He basically was like, it's not going to do anything anyway because I can't do nonverbal spells. So might as well give it a shot. But then when he gets a lot of grief from Hermione for trying a spell he doesn't know the intended outcome.
Yeah, I mean, and I think what's interesting is that, you know, the boys kind of have a point and Hermione kind of has a point. Uh-huh. And I would say the way Harry did this spell was definitely one where I think he was being a little bit careless. Mm-hmm. Although, as we, you know, he tells Hermione he's seen somebody do this, or he's heard somebody do this spell before. He's heard of this happening before. And he doesn't tell her quite the truth of how he learned it, but that his dad has used this spell. And so he knew this one, but just randomly doing a spell that you don't know how it works or what it does in a room full of people is probably not the best way to go.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because it also leads into the fact that there are ministry-approved spells and non-ministry-approved spells. And we've heard of, like, kind of the unspeakable spells, and we've heard of... But I guess I never really stopped to think that there could be spells out there that the ministry doesn't approve you doing, like that they keep track of what you're supposed to be able to do and things like that. And I thought that was so interesting because I never thought never occurred to me that that would be a thing beyond these specific ones that you're not allowed to do. It just sort of brought a little bit more of the environment into, right? A little more world building there, that there's things to control outside of just what you can't do, that there's actually things approved to do. So I thought that was a little interesting tidbit she threw in there too, because I don't know that we've ever really been told that before.
No, I mean, I think you're absolutely correct in that. This is something that's new, this idea that, like, you know, there are spells that the ministry would approve, and then there are ones that have not necessarily been approved. And so, and it brings to mind, like, how do you create a spell in all of those? So, like, I want to know all about that. That seems like it'd be fascinating, but that also seems like it would be a reference material book that JK would have to write at this point. So,
or we could just go to Hogwarts, man.
Dude, I'm so there. Let's do it. The thing I really liked about, and where I think Hermione had a really interesting point is she shows how magic can be used for good or for bad here in her point. And, you know, she mentions that remember the last time we saw people dangling from the air, floating, helpless? And, you know, that was the Death Eaters and what they were doing to the Muggles at the Quidditch World Cup. And so we really see here how, you know, magic as a tool is a good thing, but it can also be used for very bad things. And so, and that actually gets to Harry, like, he remembers this, and he doesn't really have so much of a retort for this that's great, you know. Obviously, he's saying they're abusing it and everything, but, you know, the responsibility of using this power is important. And I think that's what Hermione's trying to get at, is we need to be responsible with what we've been given. And the gift of magic is not something to be misused.
Yeah, she's basically telling him he's being too cavalier. That, like, the spells and the tips and the just trying things is not... While it's not necessarily hurting anybody now, it's not necessarily the most... wise way to proceed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought it was pretty interesting how they're talking about whether, you know, they would actually, you know, fit in with Death Eaters or whatever. And Harry's like, yeah, I'm sure that they, you know, I'd fit in just fine if they weren't trying to do me in all the time. And like that even gets kind of begrudging laugh from Hermione, which is great. And then Jenny comes over and delivers him another note, which he has a new meeting with Dumbledore coming up. And Harry's feeling so good about this, he immediately asks Jenny to go to Hogsmeade with them. And unfortunately, she's already going with her boyfriend.
I didn't take it as Harry asking her to come with them, but more as like, hey, are you going? Like, you ask your friends if they're going downstairs to have lunch or if they're going to the break room to have lunch and like, hey, are you guys going to have lunch? That's how I took it. Like, hey, we can all go have lunch together. Not as like him asking her to Hogsmeade like he asked Cho last year.
Yeah, no, I didn't take it as them being a date or anything, but I did take it as him asking her to join them specifically, like Hermione, like
bring her
and Ron,
into
like
the
as
fold
the group,
a
right?
Bit. Yeah,
yeah, like
okay.
Okay, she's part of our group, you know. And but I also think it's interesting that Harry would ask her to come along with them. You know, it shows that there's a little bit of a little interest there in Ginny that maybe wasn't there before.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah,
but their Hogsmeade trip is pretty awful from the start.
Really sounds awful.
But I do love that Ron gives Filch some lip as they leave the castle, because they get, you know, searched for any dark wizard things as they're leaving the castle. And he makes a quip about, why would we care if we're leaving with it? Would you just care if we're bringing it? And I love that she's like, and Ron got searched twice.
Yeah.
I love how he kind of pisses off Filch a little bit.
Yeah.
That's probably the only funny part about anything that happens from here on out, to be honest.
It is, because, I mean, Zonko's joke shop is already closed, unfortunately. Like, it's boarded up. They go to the sweet shop and they run into Slughorn, who's trying to get Harry to come to one of the group meetings, and Harry can't go because he's meeting with Dumbledore that night that's coming up.
Yeah, I just want to clarify. Harry, air quotes, can't go. He's apparently made a point of scheduling something over every other invitation.
Yes, yes. You know, because he doesn't want Quidditch practice, and you know, I mean, there's always a good reason. So,
and I do love that he takes that as a moment to, we talked a moment ago about Ginny. You know, he takes that as an opportunity to laugh with Ron and Ginny about how terrible all that would be, and how it would be so funny to watch Hermione stuck with some of the people invited to those meetings, all by herself.
Absolutely. So, and as they're heading to the Three Broomsticks, they run into none other than the owner of the Hogshead, which we know is Dumbledore's brother, and Madungus has been nicking things from Harry's house, Sirius's house.
And Harry is
selling them on the black market.
And Harry is very, very angry about that.
I mean, wouldn't you be pissed?
Oh, yeah. He had like a Hermione-level righteousness about him during this moment. And I loved it. And I did love that Tonks was the one who kind of had to walk him off the ledge a little bit more, bring him in, kept kind of being like, get out, get in, get inside. And that Hermione had to keep shushing him because he was making quite a scene.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes sense for Harry. You know, this is very fresh for him. And, you know, it's something that he feels very strongly about, honestly. And, you know, this is his legacy now, because this is now his house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so Madungus hasn't just stolen from what was serious is he's stolen from him too. And so, and Harry doesn't really care about things, but it's what they represent, which is his last connection with Sirius. And so,
well, and I think, and he kind of mentions it a little bit too, I think it also speaks a little bit to his distrust or his lack of faith in the Order of the Phoenix, and the fact that, you know, he's like, they can't even control him from stealing from their own headquarters. Like, how can they control anything else? So I think there's a little bit of, there's a little bit of distrust fueling that as well. And that it's a little bit of a betrayal for them that, you know, they're letting this happen on their watch to him and to Sirius's memory. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of that fueling him as well.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think Harry still is a little frustrated with the fact the Phoenix didn't trust him beforehand, mm-hmm. you know, the Order of the Phoenix. And so that's all been there. And honestly, things don't go great at Three Broomsticks. I mean, they leave pretty early. But before that, I do love Ron getting caught looking for Madame Rose Murda, you know, who he's always had a little bit of a flame for. And I love the way that J.K. Rowling describes it. The way she writes it is so funny. He was trying to catch the eye of the curvy and attractive barmaid, Madame Rose Murda, who he always nursed a soft spot for. Like, it's just so funny. And Hermione even, you know, she knows exactly what he's trying to do. It's like, and she says that, I expect nothing, because that's what Ron said when he got caught, is getting more fire whiskey. And Ron just completely ignores her, which, It's just a little tiny funny scene of like teenagers being teenagers and ribbing each other for things like this, which she adds to these books, which are really fun.
Yeah, she does a good job of that. And there's just enough, like, there's just enough. I can't say anymore. There's just enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and so, and this is where I kind of where you're leading. In some ways, is as they're walking back to the castle, they're behind Katie Bell and her friend, and Harry's just randomly starts thinking about Jenny. Like, he's just kind of thinking about, you know, what her and Dean may have been doing, and the fact that they probably were cozy at the tea shop that he, you know, the old haunt he'd been for couples, and he's just kind of, like, mad about that, and that's when everything gets, like, super crazy. Super fast.
Yeah, they're walking out in the snow where it's freezing cold because apparently the weather's getting progressively worse as they're in Hogsmeade. And as they follow out to other members of the Gryffindor house, they realize that they're arguing, and it's Katie Bell and her friend Leanne. And they're arguing, and all of a sudden something very odd happens to Katie Bell.
So they're arguing and everything, and the next thing you know, she is like flying in the air, arms outstretched, her hair is whipping in the wind, and she won't come down. And Harry is like, this is not normal. This is not like what happened this morning where it was a joke. We were, you know, playing around with it as, you know, because they even mentioned that all the boys start doing to each other in the dormitory. So it's like, this is super serious. Harry realizes this looks like a curse. And so he just starts booking it towards school, and he runs into Hagrid coming out of the woods, who is visiting Grop, and Hagrid is able to get her down, and they start bringing her to the school. And they're, before they do, they realize that the package has been opened that she had, and there is a necklace in there that we recognize from Borgin and Burks. And it obviously is not something we want to touch, so Harry wraps it up in his scarf that he's been wearing, and they get back to the castle where they run into McGonagall.
Yeah, it's so interesting because it's just one of those times where you're watching, like, we talk about Harry struggling in Defense Against the Dark Arts. We're talking about him taking these. He studies and does all these things, but this is that moment where those kind of street smarts, those natural instincts really kicked in. Like, he knew to go get Hagrid. He knew she'd been cursed. He knew what to do. He came back, knew not to touch it. He knew that that was the thing that turned her this way. Like, he was able to connect those dots like a heartbeat, and he just like called it out. He led the way through. It was one of those moments where like there's a reason that Harry steps up. There's a reason why people see him.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, he takes command of this situation, obviously by running to get Hagrid and then by making sure that the necklace is taken care of. And I just kind of love McGonagall, you know, at here. And what's fascinating is, you know, after McGonagall hears from Katie Bell's friend Leanne, and about how, you know, she had come back from the bathroom and she said that she had to bring this gift to somebody at the school and she was acting kind of strange and didn't know what was going on. And then, of course, she touches this thing on accident after as they're, you know, tussling with the package and everything goes crazy. And then she starts talking to Hermione, Ron, and Harry. And Harry thinks he knows exactly who this is. He thinks it's Malfoy.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting because this is a big part of the movie as well, right? The visual of her flying up and all of that is very big in the movie. But the actual way the rest of this plays out is very, very different from the movie. Specifically, not just the reasoning behind McGonagall disregarding Harry's suggestion that it's Malfoy, but also the fact that it's kind of alluded to the fact that Harry and McGonagall don't really have trust yet, and in the movie we get the impression that he does. He's very much more forthcoming, very much more trusting to McGonagall outright, and here he's sort of hesitant and doesn't. It even says he doesn't know if he can trust her. So it's fascinating because that to me creates a whole different feeling in this situation, and makes sense why he's kind of brushed off or why he feels like he's brushed off in this particular theory he has. But yeah, it's pretty fascinating because he accuses Malfoy and they kind of go through the whole process and McGonagall's like, tell me why and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Hermione kind of pipes in that doesn't necessarily mean anything. And then we come to find out that it can't be Malfoy because he was in detention with McGonagall when this happened.
Yeah, and it's really interesting the fact that he was in detention with her.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, McGonagall's like, I've got to go upstairs. I've got to check on Katie Bell. And so, of course, the Trinity keeps talking about this. And they're talking about, well, who could this have been for? And so they name people like Slughorn or Dumbledore. And Hermione thinks, well, maybe it could have even been you. And Harry's like, but why would it be me? Because if they wanted it to give in to me, I mean, we were behind Katie the whole time.
Right.
She would have just turned around and handed it to me. And so, you know, Malfoy is really thinking that Harry is still thinking this is Malfoy. And regardless of whether he was at detention or not, that somebody, was helping him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's interesting here is that it makes sense for Harry to be so obsessed with the fact that it's Malfoy,
mm-hmm,
in many ways. And what's interesting is to kind of watch how this plays out as maybe the opposite of Snape and his father, you know, the hate that they have for each other.
Yeah.
It's replaying in many ways with these two characters. But we're still in a place where Malfoy has not given us any reason to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah,
because he's
yeah.
shown himself to be a pretty awful character.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, as a reader, you really want to just believe Harry because you want to believe, like you said, there's no reason for us to trust that it's not Malfoy. And as readers, we know there's more going on than the main characters are actually aware of, just based on the very, very beginning of this book, right? The first, or was it like the second chapter? But there's also something to be said about this. We've seen what happens when you focus too much on this obsession, right? That's how you get Snape, who is literally a grown adult man who is berating a child because he can't let go of the past. And this is a situation where Harry is walking a very dangerous line. And I think a lot of people think he's already crossed into this idea that he is obsessed with Malfoy being the bad guy. And that he is believing this to be true, even when he has evidence that points in the contrary of his sort of theory. He's doing the opposite of Arkham's razor. The easiest solution is not always the solution. Malfoy was in detention. The easiest solution is it was a Malfoy. So it's so interesting because I think he's losing the benefit of the doubt. He's losing a little credibility the more he pushes this theory without fact. It's from the outside and hindsight looking, it's like if you just let this go until you legitimately have evidence pointing in that direction, you'd probably be better off. But he's so fixated on the fact that it has to be Malfoy that even by the end of the chapter, Rowling describes it as people are ignoring him when he brings it up. Like they just don't respond to it anymore. Like Hermione and Ron just blow past it and keep going on. And that's not a good sign when you want the support. I can only imagine it making Harry more and more frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most interesting thing here is that people are applying, different types of logic to all of these things. But as we know from all of these books is that the truth of the matter is always going to be a little bit more complicated than anybody thought. And it will all make sense in the end. So, Harry seems to be the only one who does seem to be thinking along a certain line. And he's also realizing that just because not all the puzzle pieces fit yet doesn't mean it's not necessarily true.
Right.
As well.
He's trusting his gut. He's trusting his instinct. And that's something that's really hard to convince other people of when you don't have like evidence to back up your gut, right? So he's in a situation where stepping back and not pushing the issue maybe would benefit him, but he doesn't mean he's wrong, right? And it's, I think, something a lot of us have struggled with, or everyone has struggled with at some point. Like, you're right, but no one's listening to you. And it's so frustrating. I can only imagine that, especially when it's something that's life or death and not just where do you want to go for lunch or, don't put that on the washing machine. It's got to be even more stressful across the board.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the chapter just ends there with Harry, I think, being kind of frustrated. Ron and Hermione kind of not even answering him the end. And so, with him having a time to hang out with Dumbledore soon, I think this will definitely come up again. It'll be interesting to see what Dumbledore has to say about all of this when we get there. And so, but you will have to wait till, at this point, the new year.
Yeah.
So,
or if you're watching, listening to this in replay, you don't have to wait.
You'll have to enjoy it then. But we're going to enjoy a little bit of the holiday season here. But we're excited to be back as we get into chapter 13 with the secret riddle. But Drea, if anybody wants to catch up with you over the holiday season here, where can they find you?
Not sitting by a fireplace because I live in Arizona. Or you can find me online at on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN. And you'll probably just see a bunch of photos of my little one dressed up as something in some way. Because, that's what you do when you have kids. You put them online.
That's true. That's true. And it's a perfect time because I'm sure she'll be dressed up like a reindeer or something cute.
Yeah,
so
we'll see. We'll see what we can
totally
convince her to wear.
And you can find me. I won't be wearing anything strange over on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name Matt Rushing 02. I'm here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week. And, with The Rise of Skywalker coming out, it's the perfect time to enjoy some Star Wars talk from us. You can also find me on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One is called The Orb. I do that with Chris Jones as we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. General Geek Show I do with Christy Morris as well as other friends. We talk about all of the fandoms we love, so don't hesitate to reach out to us over there and listen to us on the 602 Club. And then last but not least, talking about films through the lens of faith with my good friend Courtney on Cinema Stories. But we do want to say thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.